Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm excited for you to check out this episode. This is with Eric Kirkham, one of the coolest dudes I've ever met, literally a Renaissance man. And when you see his beard, you're going to know what I'm talking about. But more than just the beard, this guy has created a wellness company that has impacted hundreds, if not thousands, of people's lives. I use his modalities like cold, sweat to get over tough things that have happened to me in my life and thrive and go further than I ever thought I could in my business, in relationships, and just in an understanding and appreciation of life. So one of the stories that he's going to talk about in this video is how he's overcome a childhood that is just insane. He's overcome stressors that most people would break under, and he's just thrived despite them. So I know you're going to gain a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge from him. He also gets into making a meal for his significant other that gave her a lot of gas, and how he was able to be honest about that. And being honest and authentic with each other is something that I think is not celebrated in society. So he's going to get into that, male-female relations, just authenticity, and overall, his businesses have helped hundreds of people thrive. So I know you're going to get a lot out of this. So let's dive into this episode with Eric Kirkham.
So we're rolling.
Here we are.
Thank you very much for having me, Ryan.
Yeah, dude, I'm so excited. I mean, there's so, like I said, I have 50 questions, but the first one I'll lead with is, how did you become the most interesting man in the world?
I don't know. Maybe second. I know one person more interesting than me. I think it's, I was actually thinking about this, like I've never gone with the grain, and it wasn't a rebellious thing. It was like, what can I learn instead of just going with it? Like even in school, like my mother is an attorney. And so she, whenever people would say stuff, she was always putting it to the litmus test, like trying to challenge it and trying to find the, not necessarily the errors, but maybe where this wasn't holding up quite right. And she really dove into it analytically. And so I had that growing up. And so I was always asking questions and then going and trying to find some answers.
Awesome.
And as I got older, it's like that base of answers that I could go search just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Because we start searching with, you know, friends, like my other best friend in, you know, we kind of an echo chamber, and then our parents are a little bit of an echo chamber, and then our extended family. And then as it grew, like so did my answers and so did the knowledge base. And so it was always just exciting for me to find out more stuff.
Wow. Dude, that's amazing. I feel like not a lot of kids have that opportunity to kind of open into that space. So you're basically critical thinking through everything and problem solving. Your problem solving skills were honed at a young age.
Yeah, I think so.
And so that, and that's actually something I noticed about you early on was like this guy, like if you want to like pave a driveway or you need to like code an app, like I would come to you for both. Like,
yeah. Like, it's true. I've done both.
It's just super rare, man. It's super cool. So you've taken that mindset and you've created a wellness company.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, and it's growing. I mean, I've seen it grow. And just for some context for everybody watching, I met Eric through a retreat called Rewilding in St. George, Utah. And you're a yoga instructor there, but you're kind of a mindset instructor is kind of what I felt from you. Is
okay,
like
through
the practices you were teaching in yoga, I felt like you were encouraging people to use that same creativity and mindset that you just talked about that you learned as a young man. And then you facilitate the sweat lodges there as well. So for context as well, if people don't know what that is, do you want to kind of tell them what that is?
Yeah. So, I've done sweat or heat practice all over the world from Austria, Germany, Peru, Russia, Canada, Mexico.
They allow it
United
in Canada?
States.
It's legal in Canada?
Yeah. Right. It still is. We can still go up there and do it. And I love the practice, even going to the sauna at my local gym, like loved it. But I just, it was never home. And so I wanted to bring it home. So after practicing it in as many places as I could, I brought my amalgamation, like my aggregate sweat practice to my home and built my version of a sweat lodge. I don't try to copy any one person. I try to copy everybody, like bring the best of this practice that's been worldwide for so long and bring it to how I want to bring it to the world. And essentially, you've been in my lodge. It's a 12-foot wide dome. It's about 6 feet in the center, and we heat it up to 150 to 170 degrees, going 3 rounds, 20 minutes each. I really like to cold plunge in between rounds, let us cool off. But yeah, it's been a really neat practice, and it's had a lot of benefits that I wasn't aware of, like the community that got built around it of people who like to come and sit in the sweat lodge regularly. As I told you, I was sweating with one of my friends this morning, and well, one of our mutual friends actually, and just neat to have that space to be with somebody else or 10 other people and just be, this is our little world right now for this hour. And we don't have to, all those thoughts we had yesterday and today and tomorrow, like we just got to put those on hold and just be humans in this moment.
For sure.
And that's what I love.
Dude, that's amazing. And I want to get into some of the physiological benefits of it, but just for the people out there, like it's hard, we can't like describe, or we can describe, you can't see the actual sweat lodge right now.
Yeah.
But it's made with like rocks from the desert, right? Like you took rocks from the desert, calcite. Is that what?
Selenite.
Yeah. Let's get that one wrong. I want to say, what's the stuff that's like fat on the back of your legs?
Cellulite.
Made with cellulite.
Yeah. Made with lots of cellulite. No, we
actually will remove cellulite. Yeah,
we make cellulite cry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause that detox, you're breaking down toxins in your body. That's probably making men and women fat, right? At some level, making them retain water, making them retain different toxins is what is probably slowing a lot of people down mentally and physically.
Very much.
But anyway, the dome itself, having, it's made with those desert rocks, and it just, it's just like a calming feeling. If I have to describe it, when you walk in, you've got vines kind of around the outside that are encompassing the entrance. So it's this whole incredible experience. Like I think when people picture a sweat lodge, they wouldn't even understand the level that you've taken it to. So I'm trying to emphasize that. And your company is called Yogi the Red, yogitheRed.com.
Yeah.
Is how to find you.
Thank you.
And, dude, it's, I was telling you the other day, so again, physiological benefits, I want to talk about that. But just for, again, for the people watching, I sweated with you and my dad. We went, we did a sweat. We did a little stretching and yoga in there.
Yeah.
And then we did this scraping thing where we're scraping, which is helping remove toxins as well, which I know you'll get into. And then the next, I mean, it's intense. It's not easy, but it's also, to me, it's meditative, and it's such a centering experience now that I feel relatively rejuvenated that day. But then I really noticed the benefits after a sleep, and then the next morning.
Yeah.
And I was in the gym the next morning, and I was just like, what is happening? Like I was lifting like, you know, 20 extra pounds. I'm just like, oh, like, you know, it's just this amazing feeling. But I think it was the detox. And that happens essentially every time I do the sweat with you.
That's awesome.
So and then the mental clarity is there. So when I go, you know, that day after the workout, I went and was working on my YouTube channel and, you know, managing a team, doing that. And I just felt clear. And my, you know, I did probably 6 hours of work in 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
You know, just got it done over. And it just was, it's just such an empowering feeling. I know everybody out there is like, you know, they're going to understand that I have a man crush on you now, which is true. Let's be honest. Who doesn't with that beard? But yeah, man, do you want to talk just, you know, some of the physiological benefits that come from what you do and maybe why you've chosen to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. The biggest physiological benefits that I really like to emphasize to people, and I'll tie this back into a little bit about what you said about fat and cellulite. We now know that pound for pound that people have of body fat on their body, we have the essential fat, which is about 12 to 13, maybe 14% for men, depending on genetics and where you're from and height and all that. And then it's about 20 to 25% for women, depending on genetics and height and, you know, all of that. And so
I'm going into my over-caffeinated phase.
Over-caffeinate. I do it daily. We have our essential fat, which we need for our healthy metabolic function to make our hormones. And then once we get past that, especially in today's day and age where we have a lot of environmental toxins, pollutants, contaminants. When we ingest those, however they get into our body, whether it's through our skin or through our lungs, through the air, or just eating it, whatever, those toxins create an inflammatory response in our body because our body doesn't want it, knows it's not good for it. And if our body is too busy taking care of other toxins at the moment, like let's say we went to the bar and we had a couple drinks the night before, mm-hmm. our body's main goal is to get rid of that alcohol.
Sure.
So whatever else I ate during the day, or if I was, sitting at a bus stop breathing in fumes coming, like exhaust fumes coming in, my body can't deal with that extra toxin load. Mm-hmm. And so what it does is actually stores it in fat, and the fat mm-hmm. inflames, and the fat encapsulates and holds on to those toxins until our body gets to a point where it goes, okay, now we can start processing, and it'll start pulling that out. So a big thing that sweat lodges, which you've alluded to in sauna, and I'm trying to use the word sweat lodge, heat practice, sauna, all of this is encompassing, not just lodges. It's just getting right. into the heat, into these conditions, helps our body go into detox overdrive. So it really ups our lymphatic system. So circulating, if you're not familiar with the lymphatic system is essentially the sewer system of the body.
Yeah.
So every time I contract a muscle, move my arm, we have metabolic waste mm-hmm. that is very toxic for our body that has to get out of our body pretty quick. And that's our lymphatic system that does that. Our lymphatic system and our circulation goes into overdrive when we go into a very hot situation, like a steam room or a sauna or a sweat lodge. And so our lymphatic system detoxes, our circulation increases. So it's very similar to about a medium cardio workout where we'd just be getting out of breath, like just starting to feel ourselves breathe. It mimics that
growing up, my parents told me I had an overactive sewer system, where they were talking about my lymphatic system.
Okay.
I was a gassy kid.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a part, like if you're gassy, is that something that's going on? Like your body's not processing food? I mean, I grew up on like fast foods.
Yeah. Well, me too.
Like, okay.
Yeah. So I was gassy too.
It wasn't my fault.
No.
See mom and dad.
Yeah. So what I like to say, if it wasn't in the Costco frozen food section, I didn't eat it.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That was me.
That might be a step up from like Arby's, but I don't know. Maybe not
too far.
Not too far yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same corporations profiting from both. Probably. Yeah,
absolutely. So lymphatic system gets a big increase in efficiency. Our circulatory system gets a big increase in efficiency. And then we also get what I talked about at the very beginning of, we get to be in the communal space doing something tough. So we have very much the physical, the circulation, the lymphatic, and then we get the emotional and the psychological as well of, I'm going through something tough with people who are in my community, at least the community for this moment. Maybe we're long-term friends outside, but for that moment, we're in this community, we're in this container. And we're doing something that's very difficult. And you were in the military. I was not. A lot of people form lifelong bonds in difficult situations, like basic training or whatever, selection or battle or whatever challenges come up in the military. Like, people who go through hard stuff together bond.
Absolutely.
Being in a sweat lodge is tough. Like, people bond. Even though we might not know each other before we show up at the heat practice, there's a sense of camaraderie and community after we've been through that experience together. Mm-hmm. And all of us know we feel better when there's people around us. Like, we have to have that community. Like,
dude, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. Just mm-hmm. a quick side yeah. story. So at the rewilding retreats, mm-hmm. there's sweat lodges, which you help facilitate. There's cold plunge, mm-hmm. which you also help facilitate.
Yeah.
And I went to one, this was a couple months back, but the power of community really hit me as I was in a cold plunge and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I feel like I'm going to die, you know? And then looking around and like hearing you just be like, I think you just said, hey, use the tools, mm-hmm. like use the tools you have. And there are certain tools, right? Like tapping on your head,
tapping the breath,
humming, mm-hmm. but just like dude, you were there, and then everybody else is there, and they're about to go through the same experience or they already had. And it's a, like, community in those situations is a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, like, even because that's like an intensive form of community, like a really healthy, intensive form, mm-hmm. where you're together for 3 days.
Yeah.
But it, like, that feeling and those good chemicals last, like, it extends for, I mean, months, yeah. You know, and then you hit a point where you're like, oh, okay, I got to go back and get some more reps in. Like, I'm feeling like I'm missing that community. But anyway, the community aspect to me, why is that? Is it just because we're social creatures and that's why it impacts us so much?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because after those retreats, my productivity goes up, happiness levels, my ability to think creatively, like all these things, I'm just hitting on all cylinders afterwards. So it's a combination of everything, right?
Very much. Yeah. Synergy of the physical, the psychological, and the emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't even use solitary confinement for the worst of the worst offenders in our society.
So true.
Because it's too, we found that it's too inhumane. Like,
yeah.
we have to have a little bit of a social environment. Otherwise we go crazy.
Yes.
So we've gotten rid of solitary confinement in our prison system because it's inhumane.
Like, yeah.
Even for the worst of offenders, we're saying that. So that tells us, like, how connected we are to others, and we need that connection.
Yeah. So what would you say to people out there right now that are maybe feeling like they don't have that community, you know, they're on their phones a lot. There's this just gap where they're like, I want a community. I want to have better friendships and relationships, but I'm told that if I'm on, you know, they're falsely told that if you're on Instagram, that's a community, or, you know, there's little crutches they're using that are maybe not as fulfilling, and they're not understanding what's going on. So any suggestions on how to kind of crack that nut?
Yeah.
For people?
Yeah. Thank you for that's a really good question. And it's kind of, it's jogging my memory of, I guess before I bought the home that I'm in, it was the first home I've purchased. I remember I was at my apartment and I was laying on the ground and I had been depressed for a couple days. And just kind of like, what am I going to go do? I don't have anyone to go do anything with. And I had been through, like, the app, scrolling the Instagram, talking to friends on Facebook, but it just felt superficial.
Grindr.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, just Hinge and Grindr. Grindr, you can find friends too. It's not just for gay people.
So yeah.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah. It just felt superficial. And I was like, I need some fucking friends. You know, like,
awesome.
that was like the aha moment. And I started to find friends at first through, like, going to yoga retreats. I'd gone to yoga retreats all around the world. And, unfortunately, like, no one that I went to a retreat with was all, like, my next door neighbor even lived in the same state or even the same country. I was the only American at one, actually two. And so it was like, okay, I know how to make friends. I just haven't found how to make those friends here in Utah and close.
Yeah.
And so it was going to men's groups, getting an invite to that, you know, pool party that was absolutely terrifying to me, that I was like, if I'm this scared, it might be this good for me.
Yeah.
And leaning into those very uncomfortable challenges, just like leaning into your first sweat lodge or your first heat practice or your first cold plunge, it was like, I'm too comfortable laying here on my floor in my apartment depressed. I'm way too comfortable. Dude.
Yeah. So the leverage was there. The leverage.
Yeah. I need to get uncomfortable. And so, like, making community is hard. Like, we don't really get taught how to make friends.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn that. And it was,
true. Just we don't.
A little bit. Yeah.
That's not emphasized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really learn how to make friends in general. We generally don't learn how to find a great partner. We kind of get thrown out there, and we don't learn about finances. We kind of just, most of us get thrown out there. If you got some of that, that's phenomenal. But most of us, by and large, it feels like, okay, go figure it out. You're an adult now. Now you know everything. And it's like, no, like, we need community to help teach us these things, but we also have to have that community in place first. And that's uncomfortable to build that.
For sure. Do you think it's a good idea if you're out there and you're going to go to one of these pool parties, you show up in, like, a Speedo?
Definitely.
Does that make you the right kind of friends?
Well, I can give you a quick story. I was showing some clients a home, and we were kind of friends. And then they're like, hey, will you be our real estate agent? I was like, great. And he was in the car industry and very like Bugattis and Ferraris and Lambos. Like that was his business. He was kind of in the higher echelons of society.
So he's not doing very well financially. Yeah. He's and, hurting.
Yeah. So I was
we're taking donations homes. For him as well.
Yes. And he's like, hey, you want to come to this pool party at my friend's house? And this like alarm bell went off. Like, I've never been to a pool party. I'm terrified of being in a swimsuit. Like, I've got body issues. Like, there's no way I could do this. And then it was that moment of like, if this is this uncomfortable, it could be this beneficial for me. And
almost like a cold plunge or a sweat lodge.
If it could be this uncomfortable, it could be this beneficial for me. I never want to get in a cold plunge. I usually want to get in the sweat lodge. But every time I do those uncomfortable things, dude, it's such just, a switch for me.
It's hitting me right now. Like that putting yourself out there socially is a form of cold plunge and sauna.
Mm-hmm.
It's just practice. A different modality of that uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah. It can almost be harder probably for some people.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? So you went?
I went. I was practicing. I started to make an effort to practice difficult things. Not eating the junk food, going on a walk, parking a little further away in Costco so that I could walk a little longer. Just those little things where mm-hmm. I started to build that mental resilience of I can get just a little bit tougher, just a little bit tougher. And when you get just a little bit tougher, a lot of times you're tougher.
Right.
And so it paid off in that pool party. Like it wasn't, I showed up and I was like, I can be anyone I want. No one here knows the conversation that I have in my head where I'm always beating myself up. I'm always mean to myself. Mm. I'm always putting myself down. I can leave that outside of this party and go be whoever I want to be. And I went in and it wasn't this magical change, but it was like, I'm just going to go talk to that girl. I'm going to go talk to that guy. I'm going to go talk to these people, this group of people. And as uncomfortable as it was, it started to build some momentum mm-hmm. and I got invited back to come back the next week and went, and it was kind of the blossoming of a social circle for me. I'm not really in contact with any of those people anymore. One of them was actually his birthday this morning, so I sent him a text, but we've kind of grown and changed and, you know, I prefer different things. Like I don't want to go hang out at a Ferrari club on a weekend. I want to go sit in my sweat lodge with buddies. And so, so we've grown a little bit apart, but it was very much like that first step.
It's awesome. Every year on the anniversary of that, you should just send him a picture of you in a Speedo. Like, thanks, dude. Thanks, bro.
I did wear like a shorter swimsuit, like something I wouldn't wear. I was like, I'm going to be a little bit shocking because I needed the shock.
Dude.
Not that they needed it.
Right. It's almost like that's a double cold plunge for you. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, wow, I'm going to have to take this, like whatever type of attention that draws, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to center yourself and be like, yeah, I'm doing this to kind of be funny. And like everybody wins. Cause I laugh when I look at my legs, you laugh when you look at my legs, or in your case, they're jealous. Cause your legs are like freaking Clydesdales. Some of us don't have that, but, I think that's great, man. Making that, connecting those dots of the social connection being a modality for growth and improvement. Mm-hmm. And when you look at all these blue zones and everything, that's one of the like there's differences in like certain things, but all of them have a strong community. That's for a long lifespan, like the longest mm-hmm. people who live the longest in the world, they have a strong community. They're there for each other. So anyway, for the real estate thing though, I feel like just what I know about you, you've built a business, you're a real estate broker.
Mm-hmm.
And you've kind of paved your own path in a lot of different areas. So you've got the wellness center, like you're building at your house. Mm-hmm. It's like a yoga studio and the sweat lodge,
massage,
coaching, right? So mm-hmm. like nutritional mindset, things mm-hmm. like that, which I think you give a lot of value in your yoga classes
mm-hmm.
and sitting in the sweat, like the advice. And it's not even advice. It's more of just like you being you and like being real with how you've gotten to where you are. And I feel like you have a very like, take it or leave it. Like, hopefully this helps. I'm not going to dictate and tell you what to do mindset, mm-hmm. which is very effective, by the way. Whenever you have that guy who's like, you need to do this, you need to do that. We all know that it's like, that's, you know, everybody's different. And I feel like you do a really good job of threading that needle and helping people align with what's going to work best for them.
Thank you.
As a realtor, what has made you successful? Because I'm sure there's probably people out there that are watching this that are going to consider becoming a realtor, that want to, you know, advance in their careers. Maybe they're already a realtor. What would you say has made you successful?
This might sound a little counterintuitive. I don't want to be the top broker. I don't want to do the most deals in Utah. Like, I want to provide exceptional value for my
clients. How dare you not value money over everything else, Eric?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Capitalist bastard. Yeah. No, I like my approach to real estate and how I feel like I've been successful with it is, let's say Ryan comes to me and is looking for a particular home. I have a industry knowledge. I'm like, hey, have you thought about these different options? Would any of these fit for you? Yes or no. And if it does, let's find you that 9 out of 10 or that 10 out of 10 property. And I'm happy to wait. Like, I'm happy for the process to take several months. Like, this could be the biggest financial decision of your life. It's where you're going to put down roots. It's where you're going to find your community. It's all got to fit. And I feel like the patience that I have and encouragement for patience for my clients is been very, very helpful, especially when COVID was going bananas. Like, I would tell people, like, we're going to write 20 offers and we're going to see 50 to 60 homes.
20 offers.
And that's just how competitive it was. I didn't have a single client in the COVID bananas pay asking price or higher. Every single one of them paid below asking.
Dude.
And it was because that's we were patient. We weren't in a rush. Yeah. And I feel like that comes through to people. That they feel like they're in control of the decision-making process with my guidance, not me in control of the decision-making process with their guidance.
Right. Well, I'm going through the realtor course right now to become a realtor here in Utah as well, mainly for my own ability to invest. But I also had an experience with a realtor that just pushed me over the edge to do it myself.
Yeah.
Because I felt like there was this, it was kind of the amalgamation of something I read in Freakonomics. And they said it in that book that realtors will sell other people's properties for, on average, somewhere between 20 and 30% less than what they would sell their own homes for, or they would encourage them to sell it, because realtors know if you sell your home and you just get it off, you get that deal done quick, you have to buy another one.
Yep.
And you're likely going to use them. So when I read that, I was like, oh, this sounds slimy. And then with other experiences I've had, it didn't feel like that. I felt like the realtor was on my team. And there's two points that I'm studying right now in the middle of this course, and it's obligation and loyalty. That's a part of the section I'm on. And I think the obligation is to, like, disclose certain information. And then the loyalty is to really make that client feel like you're on their team.
Yeah.
Regardless of, maybe they've got some crazy situation and some whims that, you know, my situation was, I run a business. I run my aviation YouTube channel, Max Afterburner, out of my basement. And so one of my big things was, hey, I can't be in a middle ground because I got to run my business. I have to go right from this house to the next house, which I know is complicated, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
And then I found myself in a situation where that realtor was trying to kind of disregard that and just was encouraging me and saying all the reasons why I shouldn't, you know, stick with the principle I made at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and this person claimed to be my friend too. So it was a bit of a, it was a bit of a mind fuck to be like,
of course,
maybe I should just listen to this person. But then if you go back to that principle of loyalty, which is what we're told in, you know, to become a realtor, you should stick by, it's clear to me, like, you know, when I start doing this, if I, you know, if I do have a client that I'm helping out or whatever, it's going to be going back to that center of like, oh, like, I'm really here to be on their team and add value to them and make a positive impact in their life, which is something I feel like you just described and you do well. You just did a deal that took, you said, 2 years to do, like, on a $1 million property that, of course, there's probably, you know, I don't think there is this with you, but some people might be like, it's $1 million. The commission on that's going to be huge. Definitely. I need to rush to get this done. And you, that's totally opposite of your mindset, man. You were like, I just want this to work out. And if it's not this house, because you cared about the people, because we've talked about the people that
Afghan refugees,
Afghan commando, right?
Afghan commando, special forces commando with the ANA.
Gosh, dude.
Came here about 5 years ago, and he's crushing it. He's doing so incredibly cool. well for himself. And the 2 year process was, you know, it's hard for a refugee to buy a home. And so yeah. we went through the lending process and all of that.
So do you feel like, I mean, obviously you care about those people, and your family is very well connected into like U.S. Special Forces mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of the amazing people in Afghanistan that were on our, that were on the side of, you know, good versus evil. Mm-hmm. They were on the good side. Yeah. So obviously you have a deep connection to just people with that type of heart. Mm-hmm. And that's who this person and their family clearly are. But do you feel like you were using, do you use some of your modalities like sweat, cold when you, cause I mean, I know you're perfect, but if someone wasn't as perfect as you, no, would you have to use, what I'm getting at is, dude, you've honed yourself and shaped yourself. You have the urges that everyone else has for, you know, whatever faults you have those same urges of like, make money, you know, advance yourself, which is not bad in itself, unless it's, unless it overrides everything else. Mm. But do you, when you feel those things, do you go back to cold and heat? And then is that something that helped you through this 2 year deal of just remaining centered?
Yeah, absolutely. So really quick story. We were 4 days from closing, simultaneous closing. So what would have happened in your instance where you close on the home you're selling, yeah. and then they, as soon as you sign the last piece of paper, they give you another stack of paperwork, and that's to sign on your new home.
Oh, that's a thing. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Simultaneous closings. It's a little bit tricky, but you just get everyone lined up, and it's very doable, and title companies are happy to help. And there's a lot of amazing people in the profession who will just, they'll really help to get that done. So it's very possible, but it is a lot more work. And so we had simultaneous closings or transactions set up, close on their home, buy the new home. And this was 4 days before that was scheduled. And the lender called me and said, hey, this loan has been flagged as fraudulent. I cannot touch it anymore. And I was like, we're 4 days out.
Yeah.
These people have a massive amount of earnest money down on this home, on their new home. And if they cancel the sale, they'll lose the earnest money on the home that they're selling.
Yeah.
And so it was very much like one of those, I felt the world drop out from underneath me.
Totally. Cause
this was very much my client's money. And also my 2 years of invested time into this. And so it was like the panic button flipped. And yeah. then I felt the panic button flip, and I went, how am I going to respond to this panic? Do I want to panic, or do I want to use this heightened level of cortisol and adrenaline stress hormones that I'm feeling in my body to find the solution?
I feel like this is what I do during breakups. is that a good use of that?
Yeah, phenomenal use. So I felt the circuit breaker flip, and I was like, I still have sovereignty in this. I still get to decide. And I immediately went right back to my breath, I was driving when I got the voicemail that, yeah, I can't touch this anymore. Started breathing, started problem solving. It was really interesting. I was teaching what I teach on the health and wellness side at a retreat in Southern Utah in Moab to a group of real estate professionals, to lenders and brokers.
Oh, that's cool. And while this was all going on.
So this, I get this voicemail that like, hey, can't touch this deal. It's fraud. I'm out. Like, wow. Best of luck. Peace.
Yeah.
And I happened to be coaching 30 real estate professionals on this like breath work, on this breathing, on these meditations through yoga.
I just think a side note, it'd be so funny if you weren't as grounded and you're like about to go on stage and you're backstage and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me. Get that person on the phone.
Yeah.
Do they know who I am? Yeah. You like go Don't on stage you know and you're like, it's about maintaining your cool, guys.
Yeah, guys. Yeah. And it was like, practice what you preach, homie. And so that's what it came down to. And I ended up meeting a lender who only had 39 years of experience lending that day. Yeah. She, you know, 39 year lender, phenomenal, phenomenal lender, phenomenal woman. Her name is Mary Lee Gilchrist. She looked at my client's profile and she's like, I know exactly what happened here. This is not fraud.
Yeah.
We got it done. We got it taken care of in 10 days. Wow. So she went she went from start to close in a little, it was about 10, 11 days. Like, it was so fast. Her team was so on it.
That's so cool.
And she was also in the practices that we were doing. She had been practicing yoga and breathing. And so she was able to hop in, look at it in a calm, grounded way and go, this is not fraud. I can see how this was flagged as fraud. This is not fraud. And she hit the ground running on it, and we got it taken care of.
Yeah. Dude, that's so cool. I just feel like, I don't think that like everything's meant to be necessarily, but I feel like when you're putting yourself in the right like mindset, you've grounded yourself and you surround yourself with the right people, everything kind of works out.
Yeah.
And that's,
it tends to, I always felt like the world was against me and conspiring for my demise.
Why did you feel that?
Little bit of a rough childhood, a little bit of a, you know, wonky do, mm-hmm. like situation growing up, not going into any details. My father ended up getting a life sentence in prison. So that ends up throwing your world off kilter. Like, up is down, down is up. When you have somebody like that living in your home. And so, it was very much like,
do you want to go into any details or would you rather not?
We can save it.
Save for another episode.
Yeah,
that's probably a whole episode in itself.
I would be thrilled to go through it. I know there's people who go through hard things like that. I'd love to share with it. We won't pull this episode into
Sounds
that.
Sounds good. Yep.
And so it was like, how do I get my mindset back from that darkness and bring it into the light? Like, nobody could be harder on themselves than me. And I already said that. And it was like coming back to, okay, how can I problem solve in a positive way?
Right.
And starting to get the mindset switch, which took me a while, of this challenge is not here to destroy me. This challenge is here to challenge me, to help me increase my capacities for the next challenge. So kind of like the boss in video games. I haven't played video games since the original Halo, but it's like every time we pass a boss, guess what? The next level gets harder.
Yeah.
It's not getting easier. And that's kind of the misnomer in life. It's like, we got better on level one so that we could do good in level two so we can get better for level three.
Dude.
And I was looking at it the other way, like, I just did this challenge. Now life should get easier after this. Like,
I should be a trust fund baby now.
Yeah.
Like, I should be sitting on a beach.
Exactly. And so it was a flip of that thinking. And it was like, this challenge is here to challenge me, to help me grow, not to destroy me.
Awesome.
And then what I call breakups spiritual growth hormone.
Yeah, that's good. I like to call it like sit in my room and drink wine and eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And
that, we got to do that too.
Yeah.
That's part of it. That's part of it.
Man, that's that point you just made of understanding that, like, when you lift heavy things, then you don't just one day get to lift light things.
Yeah.
Like the metaphor of the gym comes to mind for me. Like, you go to get stronger so that you can lift heavier things.
Yeah.
Which is emotionally, it's hard to wrap. It's hard to put those in the same kind of basket, but it's emotional resilience is like a muscle too.
Yeah. Oh, very. So. Yeah. Emotional resilience is a muscle, and we can practice it or we can push away from it.
To cap off the real estate thing from my experience, so I ended up firing this guy, right?
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't want that to happen, but it hit me one day that we just weren't aligning, right? And I probably wasn't as easy to work with as most, but I'm usually upfront. I was upfront with a lot of realtors about that because of my unique situation of running a media company in my basement, right? And so had to do that. And then this isn't just about, like, I wish this guy well. I think it doesn't matter. I'm not upset or anything. Like, yeah, I hope he does well. I hope he learns from this. But I feel like a lot of American men in general, like, the way that it ended was me being very honest. I was like, hey man, this isn't going to work out. I'm going to get my realtor license myself. Wish you all the best. Mm-hmm. And then it was like I had just broken up with like a crazy ex-girlfriend, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't blame him for that. I think that's just kind of, a lot of American men are like unaware of how to be authentic with each other in disagreements and conflicts. Yeah, yeah. And so I don't think it's just men, it's men and women, but we have this thing in society where you're nice, you're fake nice. Like, he was fake nice up until the very last text. 'Cause he was trying to maybe keep me as a client or whatever, but he knew I was getting my license. So it doesn't really make sense. And then all of a sudden, once the honesty came from my side where I was like, hey man, this is the end of the road. I love you as a, I wish you well. No, I don't love you. I wish you well as a person. And then it was like the honesty triggered something that for me, I feel like the honesty, and I don't know if it's having been in the military, but the honesty, what it triggers in me is like, well, shit. Now I got to look at myself and be like, oh, like this hurts. My pride's hurt. But this, you know, I can learn from this. I'm responsible. How did I create this? I'm responsible for it, kind of the ownership of it. Maybe that's something I did learn in the military. Cause you really, you can't bullshit anything. You have to be straight up and very direct with each other. So maybe that's what it is that military service in me that makes me more direct. But I think a lot of men who maybe haven't had that experience don't appreciate the directness, with the exception of certain people. And you are one of those people. I feel like you're someone, you didn't go into the military, but you are someone that I can be direct with, honest with, and you reciprocate that honesty. So what have you done? And what would you say to people out there maybe that don't have that skill honed yet? And maybe they don't even know they don't have it honed, right? It's like, you don't know what you don't know. But it's probably going to get them into trouble at some point, or at least maybe make their life experience not as good if they're not able to give and receive honest feedback and come to a discussion and sit down and have a resolution instead of like, oh, like now I'm going to be pissed at you my whole life. And you know, that grudge is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. You know, so what have you done to hone that? And what would you say to people out there?
So if I'm, let me see if I'm hearing your question right. So what have I done to hone my authenticity into honesty in my relationships? Is that,
and the ability to just give and receive honest feedback without it triggering live ammunition in your body.
Okay. Yeah. Good question. So with that, I feel like everything starts on our internal world, and how we act outside is how we're feeling inside. And so if I have a hard time being honest with myself, I'm going to have a really hard time being honest with others. Or if I cloak my truths a little bit to make them softer for myself, I'm going to cloak them for other people to try to make it what I perceive is softer for them.
Right.
And that's, to put it harshly, is just being inauthentic, like lying to ourselves, lying to others. And so it took some reflection of, am I being honest with myself? Like, is that, you know, extra joint or that extra pint of Ben and Jerry. I like weed. I don't like alcohol. Like, is that
much better choice? By the way.
Is that joint?
But then you eat, but then you're going to eat more Ben and Jerry's.
Then I'm going to eat way more Ben and Jerry's.
You're going to eat like 4 pints of weed, which let's be honest, it probably tastes more amazing anyway.
So it's, am I being honest with myself? Am I being honest with them? And when this comes a lot, I feel like we do it a lot in relationships, especially codependent relationships, where we become incredibly manipulative of the other person, not directly by saying like, hey, you should do this, but saying, you know, I would feel better if you act this way so that it doesn't upset my internal world. So essentially manipulating the other person through our actions, doing what we don't want to do, so that it has the effect on somebody else to do what we want them to do. Did I tie that together? So when like a former partner asked me like, do you want to go to the movies? And I really didn't, I'd say, sure. What movie do you want to see? Because I didn't want to deal with the argument of not going to the movies. And so I would change my behavior to change her behavior.
Right.
That's codependence. It's manipulation. It's me trying to control somebody else. Well, I would do that with myself and my internal world, and then taking a hard look at that of like, hey, this isn't working. It started to go out to my other relationships of, I can be honest with somebody else the way that I want to be honest with myself. And we get to avoid conflict down the road because I'm not covering up a minor conflict right now.
Right.
So although it is a little bit harder on the onset, it's way easier down the road. Like it's like compounding interest.
Is this the same thing? Like if a girlfriend asks me, like, does this make my butt look big? And then I immediately think, does she want her butt to look big? and then I decide like my answer based on what she wants.
Yeah, that's manipulation.
Because if she wants her butt to look small, I'll be like, no, not at all. But then if I'm like, oh, I know she wants a fat ass, I'll be like, yeah, babe, that butt looks big. That's you got that thang going.
That's that bubble butt look. Yeah. Yeah, but that would be manipulation. I know it's not generally seen as that. It's seen as being nice.
Yeah.
And we get into a lot of niceties. Like, I'm not going to speak what I really want to say because I want to appear nice to this person or kind to this person so that I can keep the relationship amicable and keep things moving the direction we want to go. In this real estate example, with this other agent, I feel like there could have been some more authenticity, maybe on both sides, but what you said is you got a big long text at the end. That was essentially withheld emotion that should have been coming out the previous 3 months or however long you're working together before that of this isn't working for me. You guys could have found that out in week one or week two or the first showing.
Totally.
If there had been 100% authenticity on both sides of like, hey, I just don't think this is a good fit, which is fine. Like, I'm not everyone's agent.
Right.
I definitely am not everyone's agent. And I've had clients fire me and I fired clients. Like it's like, this just isn't a good arrangement for either of us. Like, let's not fight through this. Let's have a good time.
Yeah. It's our life.
It's our life.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of that manipulation is crowded in niceties. Like, I need to be nice. I need to be nice. I need to be nice. It's like, no, we need to be true to ourselves and we'll find the people that resonate with us. And it gets so much better. Like so much better instead of this fake surface level. I'll play nice. I'll play good boy. You play good boy. And then it's like, we're adults. We need to speak our truths. We need to speak our authenticity and be in alignment with the people around us. And that's generally not, we're nice in those situations, but it's not being overly nice to hide what we really are intending to say.
Right. And I will say like I think it's just a great learning laboratory. This whole experience I had with this agent. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hit a point where, so he was trying to get me to sell my house for a price that I thought was lower. He was trying to get me to sell it for at first 900 and then 930 and something just wasn't sitting right. Mm-hmm. And we had an accepted offer, but an offer sent for 930. And I was just like, this doesn't feel right. Something's off. But I wasn't being authentic in being upfront away of like, hey man, that's not exactly, or it's not even close to what I'm looking for based on the research I've done. And so I had to go back and look at like how, cause I think there's a big responsibility as a client to, if that agent's working for you as a client, you're the leader of that.
Yeah.
Like you're leading that cause you're the one holding the bag of money.
You're the boss. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people have that flip flopped.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some agents kind of come in like they are the boss and that's a whole nother thing, that maybe, could be worked on. But when that happened, I said to him, I said, dude, well, first I went back into, I kind of meditated on it and I'm like, why does my stomach feel bad and how did I create this?
Yeah. Physical symptoms.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I realized like, oh, I wasn't direct with him and saying like, hey, this is, you know, I know you did your research. I've done this other research and I'm only comfortable selling my house at this price or higher.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say that. It was more of like, I think it'll go for this. I was wishy-washy.
Yeah. You're being nice.
Yeah. I was being nice. Yeah. So then finally it hit me and I was like, okay, I have to set the direction now. So I called him and I was like, hey man, I'm just going to be straight up vulnerable and honest with you. I don't feel like you're on my team right now, but that's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's my fault because I didn't tell you early on. And to be honest, he was kind of shocked. I don't think he was like able to really, because again, direct communication wasn't, I don't think, a norm for him from other clients.
Yeah.
And so when I was like, I don't feel like you're on my team and it's my fault, I didn't set the direction. Here's what we're going to do. The minimum price on the house is going to be $955. And if anyone comes with an offer that's lower than that, and the reason why I had that is because that's what I needed in order to get the next house.
Yeah.
Without that amount, I would have been stressing myself financially. Yeah. And I said, I don't have to move, so I'm not going to stress myself financially. And I feel like it really hit him hard. Like he was like, almost like his pride was hurt. And that wasn't what I was intending to do.
Of course.
But I think if someone's not used to that direct communication, but my goal was to be to take responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. and maybe if I took responsibility and I went first, that maybe then he would look at himself. But I don't think that it really translated. Mm. But the nice thing was once I took responsibility and was like, oh, I own this as I created this, my stomach ache went away. I felt better. And then 2.5 weeks later, an offer came in on the house for a cash offer of $975,000.
Amazing.
And unfortunately, the people's house that I was going to buy that same, literally I'm on the phone with the loan agent of the, I was acquiring another loan. Mm-hmm. I'm on the phone and she's like, good news. You're cleared to acquire this loan. And it was like a 6-week process to get everything. Yeah. Cause acquiring a loan is super complicated, mm-hmm. as you know, but there was an exception for a veteran. And so yeah. that's how I got it. I'm literally on the phone with her. And then I get the text from this agent who's like, hey, they don't want to sell anymore because their family situation had changed.
Yeah.
So that it just didn't line up, but it was a really nice reminder to me of if I don't set the direction up front and I'm not firm in the fact that you can't take on other information and like
right, yeah.
adjust, but I didn't have that. I didn't know how to deal with an agent who was kind of, you know, money hungry and pushy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be a benefit if it's a win-win situation, but anyway, there was just so much learning. And as soon as I took ownership and stopped saying like, well, why isn't he doing this? Why isn't he figuring this out? When I was just like, oh, it's actually me.
Yeah. Good realization.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, man, just wild. But I just have a feeling of in general in society, it's so much nicer and calmer on the surface.
Yeah.
To not rock the boat and tell everybody they're pretty or tell her she has a fat ass when it's really skinny and she wants to have a fat ass.
Yeah.
You know, so how have you done that in relationships? Cause I've seen you kind of grow, you were having your relationship issues. You know, we were kind of in the same boat where, you know, the high school style relationships yeah. and then I'm still there. You've surpassed me and you're married and you have yeah. an amazing partner. She's fantastic. So what have you done to grow? Like what's been your journey in relationships?
Well, we'll start at the bottom and I'll tell you a really quick story that I enjoy.
Perfect.
So I was in a 4-year relationship, very codependent, had to untangle a lot of stuff, became single, was single for several years, but never really practiced dating, never really practiced like working on myself in a relationship. I was like, oh, if I meet the right person, it will just happen. Like that's what I'm looking for, the right person. And then this will connect. So, I went on this second date with a woman and this date was unreal. It was so impressive. So we ended up going hiking and this woman had this incredible, incredible ability. So for 45 minutes on this date, the second date that we were on, she told me everything I did wrong on the first date for 45 minutes.
Huh.
It was amazing. Her recall was phenomenal. And I got off we got done hiking, got back down to the cars, and I had just been berated for 45 minutes of everything I had done wrong. And
like, was it in an aggressive way or was it more from a loving place?
It wasn't overly aggressive. It was okay. Like, you should have done this. You should have said this. This isn't right. It was just her constant critique of all of your actions are not approved by me.
Interesting.
But here I am on a second date. So here's yeah. somebody who's not being authentic with himself. Obviously I wasn't either. Like,
I think it was the beard drawer in
yeah.
for the second date. She's like, all these things went wrong, but damn.
But that beard. So we got back down to the cars and she was like, so when do you want to go on a third date? And I was like, I don't. And I really wish you the best and you'll find somebody great.
Yeah.
And she blew up at me and ended up going home kind of laughing of like, this is what I'm creating. Like, this mm-hmm. is where I'm at. Like, wow, I can't think of any place I want to be less than right now is in this situation as far as dating is concerned. And here I am. So this is what I've done. And that's because I'm not being authentic with myself. There was a lot of things I could have said, this date's not going to work, like on the first date or that, you know, earlier in the second date, whatever. But that had kind of been the theme of my dating. Like yeah. going on these dates, it was a lot of that, like, let's both play nice and have this agreement, but under the surface, we're not meshing at all. And so coming to that realization of, like, I'm not speaking my truths. Like, I really need to, so that I can get that person who speaks her truth, so that we can really align on common truthful ground, not I'm going to be on this ground that I think you're okay with, and you're going to be on this ground that you think I'm okay with, and we'll see if we can, you know, wobble balance and make this thing work.
Right. But this is, if she's hot, then this doesn't apply, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if he's hot, then she can put up with
whatever.
If they're
really attractive, you just have to put up with it.
We can just throw all this out the window.
Yeah. So in my current relationship, with my wife, it's been very beautiful, and she's a phenomenal woman. She's a wonderful cook. She's, and that's not her only quality, but she cooks a lot and she makes delicious food. And it's very intuitive, and she doesn't use a recipe book. And occasionally we have a meal that I call is too intuitive. There is too much intuitive pouring of the cayenne pepper into the curry, or there was too. And so she'll ask me, like, how do you like it? I'm like, it's good. There's way too much salt.
Yeah.
But it's very hard for me to say that, because I just want to be like, it's really good, sweetheart. You're amazing. I'm like,
because you appreciate the effort.
Very much appreciate the effort.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't want to be resentful for the next 20 or 30 years about too much salt in the curry. So I'm just going to say, like, it's delicious. There's too much salt. Or she's made, like, probably four or five things. I'm like, sweetheart, I really just didn't like that. Like, that was not my jam. Mm-hmm. If you want to make it, go for it. Make it for your buddies. I don't want to eat it.
Yeah.
And it's not that there was anything wrong with her or the meal. It was like, it just wasn't vibing with me. And
yeah.
I don't want to sit through another experience where I'm not enjoying the food. It's a distraction, and I can't be with my wife, and I'm trying to, like, hold back, like, I'm not enjoying this. And so it's like, I can just tell her now, like, this meal was delicious. Let's do 10 more of these this month.
Right.
Or, like, this one's just not working for me.
Sure.
And so it's those little itty bitty decisions to tell the truth, to be authentic, even when we think it's not going to sit well with the other person or upset them. And the big realization for this for me was, the person that I'm communicating with knows themselves way better than I could ever imagine. So right. For me to think that I can fabricate an answer that is going to fit them better than the truth is an all out lie and a total, like, spoof. Like, that'll never happen.
Dude, that's so, like, and I hope people are taking that in right now. Cause can you say that one more time with, like, what you think your answer might do to them?
Yeah. What I think the emotions that my answer is going to elicit in you, what I think those emotions are going to be nowhere close. I have no idea who you are, but I have no idea all of your experiences that have come to create you today. I have a very small amount of that information, and I don't live inside your head.
Yeah.
So me trying to fabricate an answer that sounds nice to you is a fool's errand. It's not possible. Even yes. In the most connected of people, like, thinking that I know the right answer for them it's wild.
Yes. Like, and the fact that you and Mary, shout out to Mary,
she's
phenomenal, that you guys can have that authenticity and honesty with each other. It's beautiful, man. And I'm just super happy for you guys.
Yeah. And the first few times I said that, it kind of hurt, because we were newlyweds and she's making dinner for her husband, and I just come home and it's like, is it so amazing? I'm like, I'm sorry, sweetheart. It is not.
Yeah.
Like, and I want to tell you that now. And there were some tears and there's some upset. And now when I say it, she's like, okay, like, cool. We won't do this one anymore.
Right.
Like, turns out when I put red lentils in the curry, like, you fart all night, and I don't like that, so I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, I love red lentils, you know? She's like,
you make
sorry,
a Dutch oven all night, babe. Yeah. Like, you're beautiful, but.
Yeah, and so it's like, we found that ground of just, like, this isn't intended to be hurtful or rude, or I'm not tearing you down. Rather, I'm actually building us up, because we get to enjoy more meals together. We get to enjoy more events together, like, I don't want to go to the movies. Like, let's go hiking. And like, I don't want to say yes to a movie that I don't want to sit through. Then I'm bummed out the rest of the night.
Right. And credit to you, you started that from, like, day one, because you learned the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And so your relationship now is built on that as a foundation and a structure.
Yeah.
Where I think people get in trouble, and that I've gotten in trouble myself, is you realize that a little bit later.
Later. Yeah.
And then you've built a structure on shaky ground, and then you try to like change the top floor.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm gonna make the top floor really nice now. We're gonna make this an actual like home now. But what would you say to people maybe that are in that situation? They're listening to this and they're like, well, I'd love to be honest, but my girlfriend or boyfriend would blow up at me. Or, I mean, I kind of know, I mean, think the answer is kind of obvious, but what would you say?
You need buy-in from all sides. And, that would be, for me, I've tried that in a relationship. It didn't end up working out because we had just built too much shaky foundation.
Yeah.
But I started to change and just say like, you know, this isn't going to work. This one decision is not going to work for me. A micro decision in the relationship. And when I started to speak my truth, it became really apparent, like how much unshaky ground we had laid and that it wasn't recoverable.
Mm.
I have seen people in coaching and people have come through rewilding be able to do that. I think they had a little bit better of a foundation that they built on. So it is 100% possible. I've totally seen it. It just wasn't the case for me that I could take that shaky foundation and rebuild the top floor and have it work out.
Mm-hmm.
But some couples have that ability to go, okay, we need to redo the top floor, but let's start at the bottom and remodel all the way up. And some people can do that. And it's a beautiful thing. And they come out, you know, hard as a diamond on the other side with each other. But that is a lot of pressure and a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, kind of what you're saying with this honesty and authenticity thing, I feel like, so at the time of this video being made, you know, the presidential election happened.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've been gaslit by the left for the last like 6 months or whatever. But it's the same thing that happens in relationships, or maybe it's like societally, if that's pumped into us from the corporate media and from movies and stuff like that, then we're going to do that in our relationships and it's just going to seep into us. Because whatever you're watching is, it's called programming for a reason, right?
Oh yeah.
So I'm looking back and I'm like, I'm looking back at these last 6 months and it was a gaslighting tour of Kamala Harris pretending like she was this amazing savior, but we'd never figured out what she stood for. And it was like, she couldn't talk off the cuff. So we were told that what corporate media tried to tell us is like, this is good. This is what you want to be like, right? They said that her husband was like the exemplification of the perfect American man. And they would kiss with masks on. Like, so I'm watching this and I'm sitting there like, am I on crazy pills?
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't make sense. But this media arm was just spinning it at us like we had to take it as gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like a mind virus that seeps into everyone. We see that on the mainstream news the corporate news. And then we translate it into our day-to-day life, into business, into relationships. Yeah. But it's just so cool now seeing this kind of the mandate, the reset of everyone being like, wait a second, I don't want to be gaslit anymore.
Yeah.
And it's this revolution of, I want to at least have seen someone authentically on a podcast and a long form conversation.
Yeah.
And I was telling you, before we got on, that I saw a little clip from AOC after like the left lost in like the most dramatic fashion in like, you know, a decade, maybe since
quite a while.
She was like, AOC's like, hey, all you Trump voters out there, I really want to know what podcasts you watch and listen to. This is after Trump had won from podcasts. And like for a moment I saw her kind of like, there was just like a deceptive look in her eye. And I was like, oh, they're going to try to infiltrate those as well now, or they're going to try to diminish those, or their new strategy is going to be, they know that podcasts are powerful. They know that authenticity works.
Mm-hmm.
And so now how do they attack that?
Yeah.
And how do they go at that? I know I'm kind of on a rant here, but what I see happening is they're either going to find a candidate that can actually be authentic and can actually sit down for 3 hours and not become a puddle of goo. Or they're going to have to find somebody who's so much of a psychopath, sociopath that they can hide it and come across and seem authentic, like Ted Bundy or someone crazy. So it's going to be one of those two is what I think we're going to see from the Democrat, from the left. And personally, the Democrat Republican, I feel like they've flopped now because the anti-war party are Republicans and the war party are Democrats. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's all flipped, but I don't know, what you're such an authentic dude. I just value the way that you see the world and approach the world, and how you have decided resolutely in your own relationships that gaslighting isn't going to play a part. And you've taken full responsibility and ownership of that. And you've expressed your true intentions, and you've created something that I know is not perfect, but from an outside perspective is very beautiful, is very wholesome, is very loving, is a structure where you can thrive, and that she, and that she can thrive.
Yeah.
And that hopefully, if you know, family will thrive one day. So how does a society do it? How do we shift to wanting more of that?
I'm trying to remember the documentary, and it was mentioned, I believe, in a Jordan Peterson podcast. So I'm having the soundbite come in. And this was this story takes place in, I believe it was the early 1900s in Russia, when communism was in full swing. Things weren't going great. And there was a little town, and I believe it was a pretty remote town. Everyone knew that this communism thing wasn't working, because they had come from a little bit more of an egalitarian capitalist framework. Now they were getting pushed fully into the communism framework, and the communism framework was, they knew that it was just propagating lies. It was just lies. It was just lies, lies, lies. Like, this is the best thing. Everyone's taken care of. And it was like, clearly this is not working. They could look around and see that's not working, but they're being fed that it is, and this is great. And it's just, you know, we're purging the capitalism out right now, so it's just a little bit painful, but it's going to get better. But things just weren't getting better. And a gentleman had a great idea. He's like, I want everyone who will meet with me in this town hall, and all we're going to do is not tell lies.
Wow.
That's it.
Awesome.
He said, we're not going to tell lies, that we know our lies. We're not going to tell lies. And he said the first few meetings were pretty quiet, because people didn't know what to talk about.
Yeah.
Because they had been fed constantly the narrative that the government wanted to fit. And so it took a while before they started talking about old times and old truths, and then what is true now and today, and then not starting to tell lies about the future. And it changed, it started a whole shift for the community. So in Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, it's one of, I think it's maybe the first rule or second rule, is like, don't lie. Don't lie to yourself. Don't lie to others.
Yeah.
Because really the relationship we have with ourselves is the longest relationship we have in this life.
Yeah.
And it's the most important relationship we have in this life. And if we're willing to lie to ourselves, we'll be willing to lie to other people.
Sure.
And it's not any less impactful, internal or external.
Right.
It's really what creates our whole environment, our whole ecosystem, the ecosystem of Eric or the ecosystem of Ryan.
Yeah.
If we start lying, it just becomes easy to keep going a little bit more, a little bit more. A little lie turns into a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. And it's like, what do you want to feed? What neural pathways do you want to entrench and make stronger? And which ones do you want to make weaker?
Right. Dude, that is so impactful. And I think little practices like what you've done, I mean, you've created a whole business around it, of going back into yourself, into that ecosystem, and really having to look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that with cold water. Yeah. Every time I'm in cold water, I mean, first of all, I never want to get in. I'm always happy once I get out. But during that moment, that 3 minutes, I feel like all my emotional bullshit and baggage is put right in front of my face.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, like, here's where I'm bullshitting myself. Here's where I'm bullshitting other people. I got to stop. I got to let that go. I got to move more into my wholeness, my authenticity. But it's that, it's a consistent practice, because we never arrive when we're like, oh, sweet, I sat in the cold water for 30 minutes and it's all gone. No, you're going to be dead. Or you're going to get hypothermia. Like, you can't just do it all at once.
Consistency over intensity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I feel like these people that are lying to us on, let's just say politically, since it's I think another great laboratory for us to look at, like Obama recently, one of his last speeches trying to get, you know, Trump discredited. He was like, Trump said there were very fine people on both sides of a white supremacist rally. And he wasn't talking about that. Like, it's been debunked that Trump was talking about people that wanted to tear down statues. Trump was saying there's arguments for both sides. He wasn't talking about a white supremacist rally, but the left has spun that into a lie. But we all know it. Like, we all know that's a lie. But yet he stood up in front of everybody and just said the lie.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's, I bring that up is because, you know, I thought Obama for a while was like a really good president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very well-spoken, represents the country well. And so I was kind of captured by that, of thinking like, this is a really reputable person who's authentic. Maybe he cold plunges. Maybe I'm like, what is he doing to be authentic?
Yeah.
You know, but I think what I realize is like, no, I think a lot of people in that, on that side, they're kind of drunk on power, and it's there's probably not a lot of practices in their life where they're grounded, they're doing heat, sweat, they're coming back to that authenticity. But I hope they do. I hope maybe after all this and the mandate, you know, Trump winning the popular vote, and, you know, just all of America being like, no, we don't want our kids to be trans, unless, you know, we don't want to give them hormone blockers, you know, all these things that are coming back to this core center of who we are. I wonder if the left could shift into more of that authentic way, where then we actually have two parties that can
work together.
Together and then compete to where we really get the absolute best person, mm-hmm. who's the most authentic, who's going to represent us well. But recently I've just been like, oh, and it's just funny when I hear speeches like that Obama lying, blatantly lying to our faces and gaslighting us. I'm like, oh, this guy doesn't cold plunge.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't, he probably doesn't like, you know, crush a crazy intense hike and have to sweat and feel those really tough emotions.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been subject to some sort of physical exertion that is making him really look at all his bullshit. He's just like, power, like, give me more power.
Yeah.
That's become his little game.
Yeah. And I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb. This is my first podcast. It might be my last after I say this. We'll see.
So Kevin canceled before you can come back from it.
Yeah. I feel like male, female, gender is a phenomenal difference.
Yeah.
There's nothing more. And I was thinking about this the other day. There's nothing more different than each other than a man and a woman, but there's nothing more similar.
Interesting.
Like, we are so different in so many ways, so many beautiful ways, but we're so similar in the human experience. And if we can collectively get an entire society to start lying that there is no difference between the most fundamental difference, what else can we lie about? So if we can break that one, we can break down everything else.
Wow.
And I think that's why that's been pushed so hard, is because if we'll swallow that truth, we'll swallow anything. If we'll be numb to that, we'll be numb to anything.
Yes. Yeah. Because if down is up and up is down, gravity doesn't exist.
Whoever's on the outside gets to put whatever they want on the inside is the truth.
The ultimate mechanism of control can just...
Is confusion.
Confusion, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you look at like the fall of Rome in those places, a lot of times it went to gender and not knowing who's who and who's actually in charge, no leadership. I think that's so spot on, man, for us to be aware of that and to celebrate those differences.
Fully.
Like,
yeah,
I had an amazing mother, dude. Phenomenal, phenomenal mom. But she brought so many different things to my life than my dad did.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, I think that's probably a good place to end it.
Okay.
And then I've already got a list in my head of 50 other things to talk about in our next podcast.
Wonderful.
Including how you grew such a magnificent, beautiful beard.
Thank you. And how I came back from cancel culture after saying what I just said.
Like I said, dude, I've been canceled, sort of. I've been throttled on YouTube for making, you know, a statement about the Chinese spy balloon that mm-hmm. I was just basically telling people to come back to common sense on what this actually really could mean and what we could do and what we could learn. And I mentioned a Democratic senator, and my channel went from that day of, I did a YouTube live, I had 70,000 people in the YouTube live.
Wow.
But overall that day I had 300,000 views on my channel.
Holy smokes.
The next day I had 10,000 views on my channel. It went from like, and it was just like constantly going up, and then it went to 10,000 views,
mm-hmm.
and it stayed around 10,000 views a day for 8 months.
Yeah, you got then, throttled.
Yeah, throttled. And then after 8 months, maybe at some point I'll put the chart up for people to see it. But again, that attack on free speech is just, it's so fundamental to me to fight back against that. That's mm-hmm. what my ancestors did. That's why my ancestors left Europe. They're yeah. like in the 1700s. They're like, instead of like having our speech throttled and being told we can't say what we can say, we're gonna get on a wooden boat and go over and risk death and fight against, you know, this force that's trying to destroy us. Even once we get there, there's going to be people trying to kill us. We're okay with that.
Yeah.
As long as we can say what we want to say and speak our truth. So, yeah, man, that's why this podcast, I'm so excited, and having guests on like you where we can bounce ideas like this off each other, man, I'm just very grateful. And hopefully everybody out there mm-hmm. got something out of it. I know if they come and experience what you've created, it'll change their life. Oh, it's changed mine. It's, it's why I can grow a mustache like this. <Just kidding. laughs> No, but seriously, it's really added to the quality of my life. It's put me in a place where I can literally wake up every day and say, you know, despite all the things that are going on, I'm happy. And yeah. I feel like I can look through any of the adversities and the struggles that are thrown at me, and I don't see those things as, oh, poor me anymore. Mm-hmm. I see them as, oh, this is an opportunity. I can grow from this. This is going to be a heavier weight to lift, but that's what I wanted. I wanted a heavier weight. And not that everything always has to be hard, but I think your modalities have been a huge part of my life in getting to a space where I can really just truly embrace and enjoy life, enjoy the people I love, build good things.
Yeah.
And you're doing that not just for your core group of friends, you're doing that for an entire community, a town and a city. People are coming from all over the city to enjoy what you've created. Yeah. Maybe just we can end with you telling people how to find you and
yeah,
how that'll work.
Yeah, thank you. Best way to find me is Instagram, Yogi the Red, at Yogi the Red. YogiTheRed.com is another great way, or reach out to Ryan. You know, if you trust you, I'll give you my cell phone number and we'll get you in a sweat or a massage or some energy work or a yoga session, whatever you need.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed this.
Appreciate you.
All right. Appreciate you too.